Hi, I'm Ella Sean, reluctant romance writer and host of Enchanted Beast Podcast. Welcome to the Enchanted Forest. When I grow up, I'm going to have a big house with two floors, fancy clothes, and a shiny red car. But I only wanted to have two seats and two doors. I don't want a lot of people to ride with me. I'm going to have a white poodle with Afro puffs around her feet. And I'm also going to have a bunch of friends, and we're going to go traveling all over the world in an airplane. I can't wait to do these things when I'm a big girl. This was what I wanted for my life when I was a little girl. Sound familiar? We'll talk about it. Good evening, my enchanted beast. How are you? Great. I am super stoked about getting back to my Wednesday. Last week, I deviated just a little bit. I did a really short, curt Valentine's Day special edition, chocolate dipped guilt. So if you haven't checked it out, please. It's like 28 minutes, but it really is heartfelt and talks a little bit, you know, about what Valentine's Day is, what it isn't, and why it's not one of my favorite holidays. Anywho, today as we meander around the forest, I'm talking about this concept of visualizing the life you want and then making sure you do everything you can to make that life your reality, right? It's kind of the mantra behind Enchanted Beast and being enchanted, right? It's there so that you're able to create the life you really deserve to live. And I was just thinking back to when I was a little girl and how I saw myself living as an adult. Now, I have to be honest, okay? I never really wanted the typical life. I kind of was that girl with her head kind of floating in the clouds and dreaming of faraway lands, beautiful people, and exciting adventures. You know, I think when I graduated from high school, I was 18, and there was a huge part of me that really wanted to find an old VW, like Sweet Pickles van, right? Trick it out, and just drive all over the country. And stopping where I stopped, eating where I ate, sleeping where I slept, you know? I wanted to just experience life after graduating. And eventually, right, I knew that I would end up somewhere in someone's college or university. But I really wanted to see what America had to offer me. Because all I really knew were hot, sweltering summers where breathing outside was like breathing underwater, right? And Myrtle Beach. Yeah, I went a few places as a kid. Like, you know, we went to Atlanta, we went to Augusta, we went to Charlotte. But really, I was in South Carolina and I had like a three-state frame of reference for what America was. And so I really wanted to take to the open road after graduating in my little VW, you know, Sweet Pickles van, just me, my tunes, maybe a dog, right? And head out and explore America in all of her splendor. And like I said, I knew I would eventually end up in college somewhere. And I knew I wanted to study anthropology, cultural anthropology, because my favorite writer, Zora Neale Hurston, went to Barnard and she studied anthropology. And then she just continued to travel all over the world and tell the stories of all these amazing and beautiful people and cultures that she, you know, she ran into. So I thought, yeah, this is exactly what I want to do. I want to check out America first, then I'll light someplace and go to college, get some degrees, then I'll head out again and be a cultural writer. But that's not what happened. I didn't get my VW Sweet Pickles van. I didn't drive across the country after I graduated from high school. I didn't study anthropology. I didn't leave the country. I didn't meet new and beautiful cultures and people. Nope. Apparently, my beast didn't have the same sway over me as she does now. She didn't have that back then. If she had, God, imagine what my life would be like today. Yeah, that little pause was me trying to imagine what my life would be like right now had I followed my beast at the age of 18. And you know what? I can't even imagine what my life would be like. I can't visualize what my life would be like had I followed the call, right? To just jump in a van and head out. But honestly, I don't think I'm supposed to. I don't think I'm supposed to be able to reimagine my right now life based on something that might have happened, that could have happened in the past. I mean, because to do so feels like I regret my right now life, and honestly, I don't. So I can't imagine what my life would have been like, but it doesn't mean that I'm not able to imagine what my life can be, right? I can still visualize what my life can be if I'm willing to follow my beast. I mean, I don't know where she's going to lead me. I don't know what she wants me to see or what she wants me to do or who she wants me to be, but I can visualize a life for myself, because I'm choosing to follow my beast. Now, I mentioned Zora Neale Hurston earlier because, you know, I always talk about her. She's my favorite writer in the whole universe. And I kind of go to her when I'm feeling stuck. I do. I just kind of sit down and I'm like, Zora, I need you. She's like my spirit mentor. And I was thinking about her a lot as I was contemplating this week's topic. And I'm like, I just need an anchor. I need something to anchor my topic. I need to figure out how to actually visualize the life that I honestly deserve to be living. So my favorite book that she ever wrote was Their Eyes Were Watching God. And the first two passages of that book are so poignant and so perfectly written, they slay me, right? They're so amazingly written, and it sets the book up to just really show this dichotomy between women and men, between dreams and reality. It sets us up for the duality, the dual nature of living, right? But I'm gonna go flip-flop because the second passage is really what kind of steered me in the direction that I ended up going in. It reads, "Now women forget all those things they don't want to remember, and remember everything they don't want to forget. The dream is the truth. Then they act and do things accordingly. Now, I've taught this book 1,000 times, right? When I was still teaching. And every time I taught it to a different class, there was 1,000 different interpretations of every word that Miss Hurston wrote. And now that I'm no longer teaching and I'm just kind of skimming through some of her words, they have developed new meanings for me as well. And I was reading this and I realized that my beast never forgot her dream. She never forgot that desire to jump in a VW, you know, Sweet Pickles van, and just head out on the open road and see where she would end up. She never forgot her truth of traveling and meeting new people, experiencing new cultures, right? Having grand adventures. And now, at this moment in my life, she is not allowing me to forget either. Not that. She's not allowing me to forget the dream, to forget the truth. But I am forgetting all the stuff that is inconsequential. And it's so weird. All those things that used to seem so very important, I am forgetting them. They have fallen by the wayside, but all of the things that lead me to my dream, to my truth, those things I'm not forgetting. So when I imagine living and acting according to my dreams, my visualized truth, what does it look like? How do I behave? How do I move in this life? Will the same people who love me now love me in this new life? When I think about it, I know for certain that my beast has absolutely no fucks to give about any of my feeble concerns. She doesn't care how I'm going to move and behave in this new life. She doesn't care if the people who are my ride or dies now will be my ride or dies later. She does not care. And that's really hard for me to reconcile. As I'm visualizing this new life, it's hard for me to reconcile that maybe some of the people who love me now won't be able to love me when I'm in that new place. Right? Maybe the way I move and behave and engage with other people, with my environment, with my circumstances, maybe it won't be the same once I'm in that new life, right? That life that is my truth. Now, in the first passage of Their Eyes Were Watching God, Zara spoke of men's dreams and how they attack their dreams. So she talked about the men's approach to dreams before she talked about the women's. But I flip-flopped it. But now I was like, ooh, it dawned on me. It dawned on me, and I'll tell you after I read this quick passage, that there's a nuance, there's a subtlety to what she wrote that is not gender-based. So, the first passage, she says, ships at a distance have every man's wish on board. Some come in with the tide for others. They sail forever on the horizon. Never out of sight, never landing, until the watcher turns his eyes away in resignation, his dreams mocked to death by time. That's life for men. Now, seriously, when I tell you I've probably read Their Eyes Were Watching God over 100 times and I've interpreted every piece of word in there 100 different ways, as I'm reading these passages and as I am kind of looking at this idea of turning the dream into the reality, I have always been very comfortable in knowing that she was speaking generally about the difference between men and women and our approach to going after what we want in life. But lately, as I've been kind of pondering over her words and dealing with my own words, I don't think that's all she was saying. On the surface, yes, men and women, we go about attaining our dreams much differently, you know, and so there is some differentiation. But the more I read it, and the more I look at these words through my ferrule sharpened eye, right, of my she-wolf, of Lilith, of my beast, I've come to an entirely different conclusion about what she's saying here. She says, this is the life of man. This is the life of men. Men, as in mankind, as in human beings, as in physical selves. This is the life of a physical self. The physical self will stand on the shore and see a ship with everything they want on it at a distance. But they won't go out there to get it. No, they stand on the shore and they wait, hoping that that dream will jump off the boat and make its way in with the tide. And for some, it actually does. For others, it never does. And time goes on and on and on. And then the physical man, the physical self says, well, I guess it wasn't meant to be. And with resignation, they turn away and allow that dream to be mocked to death by time. And I was like, oh, Lordy. So looking back, I realized that I have spent the years from 18 to probably 40, 18 to about 40, standing on the shore, waiting, hoping, just being a physical human. But in the second passage where she says, now women forget everything they don't want to remember and remember everything they don't want to forget. The dream is the truth. Then they act and do things accordingly. All right, women. The feminine divine. The feminine divine, the spiritual self, the enchanted beast. Shut up. So adversely, the feminine divine, the enchanted beast, doesn't even see the distance. She only sees what she wants. And her whole life is an endeavor to have what she has decided belongs to her and her alone. Look at that. Zora, girl, she done it again. I cannot with her. Every time I think she's giving me all the nuggets of knowledge I'm going to get, every time I think I can't pull anything new from her words, I do. She is such an amazing spiritual mentor, constantly feeding me so that I'm able to thrive. But this is my new interpretation of the first two passages of Their Eyes Were Watching God. When she talks about the way that men live, she's speaking of the physical nature of mankind, how we are waiting and passive and hoping as we allow life to ebb and flow in front of us, but we don't do anything to interact with it, not really. And then she talks about women, how women forget everything that doesn't matter and remembers everything that really does matter. And the only thing that matters is the dream, because the dream is really the truth. And so we act and we do accordingly, and that women is really the spiritual self. It is the feminine divine, the enchanted beast, that powers us. She's not concerned with anything else. She's not concerned with the ship or the ocean or the shore or the distance. She's only concerned with what she has decided is for her. That's what happened when I was 18. I was standing on the shore. My beast was wading into the water. Lilith was going because she knew exactly what was out there. And I saw it too. I saw my dreams for the first time as my reality. I saw this amazing life. And I saw it as my reality, as my right there reality. And it scared the hell out of me. It must have scared me into locking Lilith away. It must have scared me into locking my enchanted beast up. Because I just accepted the perspective of man, of the physical self. I locked my enchanted beast up, shut that third eye, and decided I would just be physical. Because I didn't think I could have everything I saw. I didn't think I deserved half of what I saw. I didn't think I deserved to live that life I saw before me. And so I ended up waiting on the shore, living the life of men. And even though I still wanted the dream, right? I mean, I've seen it, so I wanted it. But I wanted it to come to me. Because in my mind, I thought, if it came to me, then it's really mine. It was really for me. Well, damn. I wasn't really expecting that revelation. I wasn't expecting to come to that conclusion that I chose to stand on the shore and passively wait for my truth to come my way. So, okay, here's a quick recap. By the age of 18, my beast said the life she wanted us to live, she knew what it was and she knew how to get there, and all I had to do was trust her and follow her into the forest. I, my physical self, was scared of that life and didn't believe I could have or that I deserved it. So I locked my beast away and stood on the shores and awaited. I waited for my dreams and my truth to come to me. I'm gonna be honest, I really can't believe this. Like, I cannot believe that all this time. But you know what? Where am I? Here? What time is it? Now? Anytime I start to think back on my life and on choices that I've made and decisions that I made that may have thrown me off some course or whatever, and then I start to lament it and regret it, and oh my God, I can't believe I didn't just, I have to stop and ask those two questions of myself. Where am I? Here. What time is it? Now. So what are we focusing on? We are focusing on here and now. It's just a little something to help me stay present. Because obviously I can't go back to when I was 18 and follow Lilith out into the forest. And I don't know that I would if I could, right? So I can't do anything about it. So that little thing just helps me get back to present. So here and now. It's time to come off the shore and wade in the water and live my true. So I kind of have to acknowledge, right, what kept me on the shore in the first place. Because I need to unpack that fear. It cannot make this journey with me. So what scared me when I was 18? A lot. A lot of things scared me when I was 18. But really, I was deathly afraid of doing what I'd never seen done before. I didn't know anybody who packed their bags and jumped in a car and just headed out to see what they could get into. I didn't know anybody who did things like that. My family sure didn't. I'd never heard of it. And because I didn't know anyone who had done it, I'd never seen it done before, I was scared to do it. I was also afraid of stepping away from what was comfortable for me, right? I mean, I knew routine. I knew going to school. I knew doing work and getting grades. I knew meeting expectations. Like, I knew and understood that, and that was comfortable. And I didn't necessarily want to be uncomfortable at all. And I think what scared me the most is what still kind of strikes fear in my heart. And that's the unlimited opportunities. The unlimited potential, the unlimited access to limitless life. That's scary AF. When there are unlimited options and opportunities for you, it can be daunting when you've only ever had very limited choices. When you've only ever been exposed to very limited perspectives. The vastness of the dream, the vastness of the truth is very scary. I was also afraid of meeting people who might harm me. I mean, let's remember, I grew up, you know, with a mom who's bipolar and in a family of Southern Black people who assumed that everybody wanted to kidnap and rape little Black girls and chop them up and bury them on the side of the road because that's just how they grew up, being afraid to do and go anywhere, because that threat was real. I mean, it was real for them. And it's still real, obviously. It's real. So I was scared that I would run into people who would do me some dirt, who would harm me, who would take my life or take my body or take my mind. Like, I was just scared to meet people who would harm me. And I was also deathly afraid of never making it back home. I wanted to know that I could make it home again. And I was scared that if I got out there in the big bad world and I traveled and I did all these things and I met all these people and I had these adventures, that I'd never make it home again. And there was a part of me that really needed to know that I could come back. So, looking back and unpacking the fears, I can see why, right? I mean, I'm 18 and I have this calling, this need, this desire, this thing that's pulling me in a direction that nobody else has seemed to have been pulled before. And yeah, I was scared. I packed Lilith up. So, what kept me on the shore so long? What kept me on the shore from age 18 to about 40? There's solid ground, right? The shore has that packed sand. And if you don't stand too close to the water, then it's my puppy. I'm sorry. But if you don't stand too close to the water, then you're pretty much on solid ground. The sand isn't going to be washed out, right? So there's familiarity on the solid ground, and there's examples of how to maneuver on the shore. I still had the need to please others and to prove to others that I was not what they told me I would be, because I did have people telling me that I wouldn't be successful, and I would be a teenage mom, and I would be a whore, and I would be this, that, and the third. So I still had this need to exceed expectations that I set for myself, but also to prove certain people wrong. That was important to me. And then I was riddled with self-doubt in my ability to actually go out there and live according to the dream. I was riddled with self-doubt. I was steeping in self-hatred because I was still dealing with insecurities and the inferiority complex that kind of comes along with being the child of a family member who's always needing help from their family. I was dealing with all of that. I didn't know what I knew. I had no idea what I knew. And, I don't know that it makes me special or anything, but I really didn't know what I knew about myself, about the world, about life. It wasn't until much later that I came to understand I knew so much more than the people who were telling me I didn't know anything. So I resigned myself to living my life on the shore. And what did I do in this life? What kind of life did I have? I went to college. I didn't study anthropology, but I did study English. I got married to my high school boyfriend. I became a teacher. I had three children. I purchased a suburban home. I drove a minivan. We had our kids involved in after-school activities, dance, karate, cheerleading. We had birthday parties, sleepovers, PTO. I was class mom, neighborhood get-togethers. The typical suburban lifestyle, right? I got a master's degree in education. I traded the minivan in for an SUV. We had summer vacations to the beach, to the mountains, hiking trails. Actually made it up to Hershey, Pennsylvania. It was great. Safe and secure. That was my life on the shore. Until it wasn't. Because that's the thing. When you're standing on the shore and then you're living on the shore, you feel a sense of safety. You feel a sense of security because the water's only coming up so far. But what happens when the tide unexpectedly changes and comes in farther? And it happened. Loss of income, illness, bankruptcy, foreclosure, downsize our home size. I developed lupus, narcolepsy with cataplexy, depression, anxiety. I was drowning in despair and a sense of hopelessness. The tide was up to my ears. And I thought I would be safe on the shore. That's why I didn't follow Lilith, crazy behind, out into the water, chasing a dream. I stayed on the firm, packed soil with what was familiar, with things I had examples of, right? I did exactly what men are supposed to do. I got married. I went to college. I had some kids. I bought a home. I was living the American dream. No one ever told me that the tide could change, that the tide could do whatever the hell it wanted to do. It didn't need permission to come up as far as it wanted to on my shore. It could do whatever it wanted to do. But, as the tide comes out, it has to go back in. It recedes. It's the ebb and flow. It's the beautiful consistency. So the tide recedes, and I notice that I'm further out in the water. I'm in the water when the tide recedes because you don't feel the land shifting under you when the water is moving. You feel like you're still pretty stable because you're still standing on solid sand. It's not until the water has gone way back out in the ocean that you realize you're out in the ocean too. So, what happened when I found myself standing so much closer to the ocean? I'm actually in the ocean up to my knees, and I find myself standing here. What happens? I gain a different perspective. It looks different when you're standing in the place where dreams and truths live. It looks so different. I realized because the waves were coming, right? The waves were coming, and I didn't fall. I didn't drown. I didn't succumb. I realized I was much stronger. Much stronger than I know. I found different kinds of people farther out, people who were not afraid of a wave coming and crashing over their heads. They knew it would crash, and then they'd just take a breath again. Like, these people were okay standing in the water. They were more than okay. They were enjoying the fluidity, the movement. So yeah, there were different people this far out. Different from the ones who were stuck on the shore, who didn't like any movement at all. They just wanted to stand there and look. That's it. So I'm encouraged, right? To wade out a little farther. To trust what's inside of me to guide me to where I'm supposed to go. I'm getting this encouragement, not only from the new people I meet, but from my new perspective. I can see, yeah, I can go a little farther out there. I feel encouraged because these waves aren't knocking me down. They're not knocking me out. I feel encouraged because the ocean isn't my enemy. It's not there to destroy me. It's keeping me afloat. I'm more buoyant. I'm weightless in the water. So I'm encouraged to wade out a little farther. And I'm learning to trust what's inside of me, that something inside of me who hasn't forgotten the dream or the truth. I'm learning to trust that, knowing that it's going to guide me exactly where I'm supposed to be. So, what's it like to wade in the water? Now, I know it's Black History Month, and I've said not one thing about Black History Month in the whole of February. And there's a reason for it. I'll save it for the last episode next week. But, you know, there is a Negro spiritual wade in the water, right? And everybody, you know, knows this song, and it's like, oh yeah, this was definitely one of those coded slave songs to help slaves, to give them instructions on when they were running away, right? If you hear the dogs, you need to wade out in the water because they can't smell you if you're in the water, right? So I was kind of writing this section, kind of making my notes, and I found this really beautiful rendition of the song. I'm going to put a link to it in the description. It's so beautiful. But I remember singing this song growing up in church for Black History Month programs. I remember doing that. So it's, you know, wade in the water, wade in the water, children, wade in the water. God's gonna trouble the water. I love that song. I still love that song. Now, I was trying to figure out God's gonna trouble the water. When I'm thinking, you know, gonna trouble the water. So God's gonna make the water choppy. He's gonna make it difficult for you. That doesn't sound like an encouragement for me to run away from Massa. Get in the water and then God's gonna make it horrible. So I went and looked up the word trouble, and there are like a bajillion different ways you can, you know, look at this word. But one of them says to take care to to be concerned with. So God's going to take care of the water. God's going to be concerned with the water. So wade out into the water because God's going to take care of the water, i.e. God's going to take care of you. So I had to clear that up for myself because, you know, word nerd girl over here, I had to know. So what happens when I wade out in the water? And I do. I wade out. I'm wading out in the water right now. I'm in the water. I'm wading in the water. I surrender. I surrender to the space I'm occupying. There's something very freeing in surrendering, in knowing that even though you are seemingly submitting to your situation, to a person, to something outside of yourself, knowing that it requires so much strength, so much courage, so much trust, it is empowering to surrender in that way. I became grateful for my life, just for my life. Right? I found reasons to be grateful to be alive. I surrounded myself with what made my soul happy, with what made my soul spark. Whatever did that, that's what I wanted to be around. I began to practice gratitude and forgiveness. Now, I know you're probably thinking, you just said you became grateful. Yes, I became grateful for life. But the practice of gratitude is living in a state of gratefulness for everything. Even those things that seem to be working against you, right? I also began practicing forgiveness. And the first person I found I needed to forgive was myself. I needed to forgive myself for being afraid as an 18-year-old, for standing on the shore and acquiescing to expectations that weren't mine, for locking Lilith away, for getting sick, for losing a home, for all of these things. I had to practice forgiving myself and then forgiving others. I focused on the present. I focused on being present, on the here and the now. I had to understand that whatever happened 2 seconds ago had nothing to do with what's happening right now. And whatever is going to happen 2 seconds from now, I can't even begin to fathom. So I can only focus on here and now. Where am I? Here. What time is it? Now. Okay? I began to create rituals with the hopes of establishing pockets of ordered space, because everything is chaotic around us. It's just the way it is. Life is in a constant state of chaos, and from that chaos, we are trying, hoping to extract a little bit of order. And so I began to practice rituals to create spaces of order so that I could move in this chaotic world in an ordered fashion. I also, in my wading into the water, I learned that I had to acknowledge, deal with, and then release anything not meant to bring me peace and joy. this one is hard. It is really, really difficult. Because sometimes what's taking away from my peace and joy aren't situations or circumstances. Sometimes it's people. Sometimes I have to learn to acknowledge that it's a person who's taking away from my peace and my joy, and I have to deal with that understanding and deal with that knowledge. And I have to be willing to release them. Because truthfully, there is nothing more important, nothing more important than my peace of mind and my joy. Not a relationship, not a friendship, not a job. Nothing. And so this is a constant pulling because my beast has no attachment to anything or anyone. She's attached to the dream. She's attached to the truth. She's attached to this life that she has decided belongs to her. But I'm still physical, right? I'm still a human. And I am very much attached to people, places, and things, right? So this one, this is the biggest wave. Maybe it's not a wave. Maybe it's a man of war, jellyfish that, can electrocute me as I'm wading farther out. Because it hurts when I have to release some things, when I have to release some people, it's physically painful for me. Lilith, of course, does not care. She has her eyes set on the prize, but I am a human and it does hurt. So that's a difficult part when I'm waiting out there. I think the most wonderful experience I've had as I continue to wade out into the water is I was reintroduced to Lilith. I didn't even have to take the lock off. I don't even know why I thought I had the power to lock her away anyway. She gave me space. She gave me space so that I could do whatever I needed to do to feel safe and to feel secure. But my beautiful black she-wolf, my lovely enchanted beast Lilith, we're connected again. I found her as I waded out in the water. She joined me. And gosh, she's so beautiful. And she's grown tremendously. So, yeah, I don't think I want to imagine what my life would have been like had I followed Lilith when I was 18. Because I wouldn't be able to say what I want to change in this life. Right? So, yeah, Lilith and I are back together, tearing shit up. And I'm just overjoyed with all of it. So, I'm out in the water and I'm waiting, I'm doing my thing, and Lilith has been scratching, right? Really, really scratching and saying to me, "Okay, chick, we're out here. We're in this ocean. We're in this life. It is now time for you to act and do." things accordingly, according to the stream, to this truth. I'm going to share one of my favorite passages with you. This is after Janie's grandma had married her off to old skullhead Logan Killix. And he has her, you know, excuse me, cutting up seed taters for planting, and he's gone off to get a little old girl mule so that she can walk behind a mule and plow the field with him. And that was not Janie's understanding of what a marriage was. Remember, I don't know if you've read the novel, then what I'm saying to you makes perfect sense. If you've not read the novel, have you been living under a rock? Go read the novel, Their Eyes Were Watching God. But for those of you who've read the novel, Janie came to an understanding of marriage by looking to nature to see how they interacted with each other. She came to understand that a marriage was a symbiotic relationship where no one party took more than they gave. And she witnessed this by seeing a honeybee going in and out of the stamen of a calla lily, pollinating it. And she realized that the honeybee was getting pollen that it needed to go back to the hive and make honey, but it was also giving pollen to the other calla lilies so that it could make more of itself. So they were both taking and giving what they both needed to make more of themselves, to be more productive. She learned what a marriage was through watching nature. But she didn't have that with Logan Killix. And so this, and I'm chopping it up a little bit, but this is where she's at Logan's house. He's gone off to get her a little girl mule so she could plow the field. She knew things that nobody had ever told her. For instance, the words of the trees and the wind. I'm skipping some sentences here. The familiar people and things had failed her. So she hung over the gate and looked up the road towards the way off. She knew now that marriage did not make love. Janie's first dream was dead, so she became a woman. Again, okay, when I would read this and I taught it and all this other stuff, I thought to myself, well, she realized that just because you were married and you were having sex, it didn't mean that you were actually making love and that you were being loved. It just meant that you were married and you were having sex. Her dream of marriage died, and then she became a woman. And so I interpreted this as a woman who realized she didn't necessarily need a man, or she didn't necessarily need love, but she just needed someone who didn't make her feel like a mule, a workhorse. She just needed somebody who was going to treat her nice and buy her pretty things and put her on a pedestal, because she didn't want to work like a workhorse. She wanted to be cherished. She wanted to be doted on. She wanted to be cared for. She didn't want to be treated like a cow that her husband had sex with. That's how I interpreted it a while back. But again, in a different context and through the shrewd eyes of of Lilith, I see it completely differently now. Janie's first dream was dead. That was the dream of her physical self. I want to get married. I want to have babies. I want this, that, and the third. I want to be taken care of. I want love. She put that away. She put the dreams of her physical self away, and she became a woman. A femininely divine woman, a divinely feminine woman, a woman of spiritual substance, a woman of divine order. It's time to turn away from the shore and wade out into the water. It's time to act and do according to the dreams you have for yourself. And so here I am, doing and acting accordingly to make my dream my truth. Only this time, I'm not afraid of the life I see stretched out before me. This time, I know I deserve every wondrous and lovely experience, adventure, meeting, and opportunity I have. This time, I'm not hindered by insecurity or some inferiority complex. Yes, I'm more than ready to go where people I don't know have never been. I look forward to being uncomfortable. It helps me grow. I acknowledge and accept every opportunity. I am no longer waiting for my dreams to come in from the water. Together with Lilith, my enchanted beast, my beautiful black she-wolf, we are acting and doing. We are the embodiment of this dream. We are the embodiment of our truth. Well, that's it. That's what I've come to understand, that my visualization of my life, it's always been the same thing. I'm just now ready to do it. So if you're standing on the shore, or if you have built a life and you are living on the shore, or if an unexpected tide has come and now it's pushing you out into the water, don't be afraid. Wade in the water. Don't worry about it. God's gonna trouble the water. Who's God? Your enchanted beast. She's got you. She's gonna take care of the water. She's gonna take care of you. Thanks for hanging out in the forest with me. Until next time, be brave, be beautiful, be enchanting. This has been Ella Sean with Enchanted Beast Podcast. Thank you for joining, and remember to stay enchanted.